Hello and welcome to The Road to Autonomy. I'm your host, Grayson Brulte. The Road to Autonomy is brought to you in part by Stantec Generation AV. Stantec Generation AV combines some of the most experienced AV experts in the industry with the resources of a global engineering firm. Stantec Generation AV provides education, consulting, assessment, and guidance to any industry interested in autonomous vehicles. Learn more at stantec.com. Hello and welcome to The Road to Autonomy. I'm your host, Grayson Brulte. On today's episode, we're absolutely honored to have Craig Harper, Chief Sustainability Officer and Executive Vice President, J.B. Hunt Transport Services. Welcome to the podcast, Craig.
Hey, Grayson, thank you for having me. A great subject to talk about, and I look forward to having the conversation together.
Oh, thank you. We're honored to have you here. You're leading the way in autonomy for the trucking industry. You're leading the way in sustainability for the trucking industry. And more importantly, you're a listener, so that makes it even cooler. And you're decarbonizing the supply chain, which is the coolest thing going today. So thank you for doing that, because it's going to have a positive impact on society and a positive impact on the environment.
Well, we've got a lot of work to do in all those areas that you rattled off there, but we're glad to be working on those and look forward to making a lot of progress in the near future.
Craig, you've had a long run at J.B. Hunt before becoming Chief Sustainability Officer. You had a 20-year run as Chief Operations Officer. You stepped into the role of Chief Sustainability Officer in late 2020. Why?
Well, you know, if you go back to really late 2019, it was evident that ESG was getting more and more attention. We heard about it from the various stakeholders, ranging from our investors to our customers to our employees and the communities. You could see the investment dollars going into different ESG funds. So we started looking at this and we found out that we'd actually been doing a poor job of telling our story. You know, we felt like we actually had a good story to tell, but we had not been telling that story. And what we learned was if you don't tell your story, someone else is going to tell it for you and they may get it wrong. So we thought it was a good time to look into the area and see what we needed to do. And at the time they chose me, John Roberts, our president and CEO, and our then CFO, Dave Mee, chose me to lead the charge on sustainability, which I was thrilled to do because it's always been a big emphasis of mine. So I look forward to leading that just the way, much the way we did when we launched the safety initiative back all the way going back in time to 1997. So that's really when it gets all started.
When you started the transition, what role did rating agencies play in this? Did rating agencies say to Ms. Hunt or the J.B. Hunt board that you have to tell your story better from a sustainability standpoint?
Yeah, when we put together this committee, we had like 25 people on it. And so we just brainstormed and, you know, did the infamous, you know, whiteboard session about, okay, what does all this mean? Where are we? What do we need to do? And we said, first off, we ought to take an inventory of where we are and how we're perceived out there amongst all the different stakeholders. And we started learning about these different reporting agencies and rating agencies. And we saw that we had really not been paying the amount of attention that we needed to those different groups, and learned that a lot of the things that we were doing, such as intermodal and J.B. Hunt 360, that if you don't have that visible on your website and the different policies that you have, such as a human rights policy, if you don't have those visible on your website, people assume that you don't have anything going on in that area. So we quickly learned that we needed to look at these different rating agencies, and we started tactically going after those reports one at a time and seeing where we were falling short as far as the disclosure. So we saw that disclosure and transparency was huge. And, you know, in going through it, Grayson, we saw that in some areas we were doing fantastic jobs. We just had not made it known what we were doing. And then in other areas, we saw that we were short, that we had not made that information available out on our website and to all the stakeholders. And then in some areas we needed to improve. So it's been a good progress, that steps to go through looking at those different rating agencies, seeing how they each interpret different segments of the business and where we need to improve.
Today, you're rocking and rolling. You're telling a great story because on Monday, April 4th, J.B. Hunt announced the launch of the Clean Transport Program to help your customers reduce the carbon footprint of their supply chain. In announcing this program, you stated the following: J.B. Hunt is committed to leading the industry toward a low-carbon future. Many of our customers are working towards short and long-term sustainability goals, and clean transport will serve as a great extension of the efforts that are already taken to reduce the carbon footprint in the supply chain. It's a wonderful program that will have a positive impact on the environment, and you're clearly telling the story to Wall Street. Could you talk about that program, please?
Yeah, we were excited to release that today, and it's been something we've been working on now for several months to bring to the marketplace. And really, I think first and foremost, people need to understand carbon offsets are something that should be looked at after a company has done everything they possibly can do to mitigate their emissions. And this is for the residual emissions that are present. That's in the release we talk about that we're going to address intermodal first. You know, intermodal is a great offering that we have, provides significant benefit to our customers, to citizens across the globe, and with a 60% reduction on the amount of carbon that it takes to move the same load from point to point all the way by truck versus what it takes to move intermodal. But even when you get that 60% reduction, you still have some residual carbon. And it's like, how are we going? What are we going to do with this? And so that's where carbon offsets come in. And what that does is that allows a customer to purchase offsets that fund an activity that reduces carbon and make their transport carbon neutral. So we're excited about it. And there's been interest from several of our customers already. And I look for that only to escalate.
A 60% reduction in carbon from intermodal. That's incredible. I remember 60% reduction. That is a huge positive step. And then you're sitting there along with the board of J.B. Hunt said, no, wait a second. We're going to go one step further in reducing carbon. Putting this all together, how is J.B. Hunt as an organization approaching sustainability? Because it seems like you're doing all the right things.
We would like to think we're doing all the right things, but we always know we can do more and more. But yeah, we are excited about this. And what's most appealing about it all to me is that it's available today. You can go out there today and get this 60% reduction by converting more and more loads to intermodal. And as an organization, we said publicly, we feel like there's somewhere between 7 to 11 million more loads that could be converted to intermodal. So it's while we wait on technologies to continue to develop, such as electric vehicles, whether they're battery vehicles or whether it's hydrogen fuel cell, while we wait on that technology, we can all join forces today and go ahead and make big improvements by converting more and more loads to intermodal. And in addition to that, we also have other tools at our hands. You know, we pride ourselves for years being good at optimizing the freight. And then with J.B. Hunt 360, what we did is we took that ability that we had internally and we made that available to outside carriers. And so now carriers and shippers can come together on the J.B. Hunt 360 platform and transact business and get the right truck on the right load at the right time at the right price. And so that increases your efficiency. And anything you can do to increase that efficiency, meaning like get that truck on there quicker, get that truck moving, that driver moving, using more of those hours of the drive time. I think it's well documented in the industry that of the 11 hours available for the driver to drive today, only 7 hours of those are actually being utilized. So you could get a big improvement in efficiency if you just use one more hour. You get approximately 13% gain right there. So there are tools, again, with the intermodal conversion, J.B. Hunt 360, better freight matching there, and then continuing to utilize the new equipment as it comes on board. And that's one thing. We have a very short trade cycle, you know, typically 4 to 5 years. So our fleet is made up of the equipment that gets the best fuel efficiency. So that's another advantage that we have here at J.B. Hunt.
As new technologies come online, autonomous trucks, electric trucks, will intermodal continue to play a large role since the reduction of carbon is so dramatic?
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's hard to imagine anything you can do can reduce something by 60%. So I see intermodal continuing to play, you know, a huge role. Obviously, we can't wait to get our hands on the electric vehicles. We've tested vehicles in the past, and electric vehicles will make a significant improvement. But at the same time that we get the electric vehicles, we also need more green energy coming online. Because if that power that's going into those electric vehicles are coming from plants that are powered by coal, then you only get a portion of that benefit that you're looking at. And one thing that doesn't get enough talk is really about renewable diesel. And that's come on just recently. But renewable diesel, that carbon footprint's already been accounted for. So we can take that waste material and have someone go through the process of getting that into renewable diesel and utilize that. That's something that could be a huge benefit for all of us.
I want to point out, J.B. Hunt, it's in your public disclosures, 8% of the fuel comes from renewable sources. I repeat, 8%. How did you start implementing that? That's a very positive starting point.
Well, I would like for J.B. Hunt to take all the credit there, but actually it's really with the fuel providers and how they've been able to bring more and more biodiesel and renewable diesel into the mix. Some of your listeners may not understand the difference, and there is a significant difference. Biodiesel, we can only go up to about a 20% blend of biodiesel. It is not the same as renewable diesel, which comes from the same feedstock, but it goes through a different chemical transaction and turns that into a fuel that you call a drop-in fuel, meaning the renewable diesel can literally go into the engine exactly in the same manner that the diesel does today. So you can run that at 100%. So those are areas that we can't wait to see that continue to improve. More and more renewable diesels coming online each and every day. So that's going to be great for the industry. So, but you are correct. 51% of our gallons have some sort of bio blend in there with them, being either renewable diesel or biodiesel.
As J.B. Hunt continues to take a leadership position on sustainability, the market's rocking and rolling and rewarding you, because from January 1st, 2021 to April 1st, 2022, J.B. Hunt has returned 32.83% as compared to the S&P 500, which returned 20.62%. So you're outperforming the S&P. That's the global standard benchmark. How do you see a sustainability strategy working? Because it's clearly resonating with Wall Street. Wall Street's loving it.
Well, again, I think there's a lot of factors going into why the company's been so successful financially, and I'm extremely thankful for those. And I think a lot of that goes back to the different service offerings that we have. Obviously, sustainability is very important, will play a greater role in the future. But I think up to this point, you've got to really look at the different solutions that we've been able to provide to the customers through our different service offerings, you know, such as the intermodal and dedicated truckload, LTL, our refrigerated unit, our flatbed unit, our final mile services, and then a single source solution. So I think it's the combination of all those business units and the way that we can leverage our engineering staff and the technology that we have internally to come up with the best solution for the customer. And we truly are mode agnostic. You know, people can say that, but most of them don't have the different modes at their fingertips. And really what has launched us in the most recent years has been the growth of 360 and bringing on the additional carriers and giving that capacity to our customers. You know, we hit that mark where we crossed over 1 million trucks on our 360 platform. So when you hit that million truck number, that is a significant amount of capacity that you have to offer customers.
1 million trucks on the 360 platform. Is that correct?
I believe in our financial literature, I think we say over 900,000. So I round it up, Grayson. I round it up.
I love that, though. But putting this all together, me putting my head on, it seems like the 360 platform is a growth market inside of J.B. Hunt. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. It's been a tremendous area of focus back when we made the commitment of how much money we were spending on technology. And what we found, it was a way, again, to offer up this capacity to our shippers. And this all started years ago when we were looking at the amount of bids that were coming in. And with our assets, we could only handle a certain percentage of that freight. So it seemed like, gosh, such a waste. We're seeing all this freight, and we don't have answers for a lot of it. And that's where we began growing our brokerage group and taking that out of the old-fashioned way of doing it with the cold calling. I mean, you think about it, is antiquated. You had a group of people that were soliciting carriers and shippers every day just hoping that you would have a truck close enough to that load where it made sense. Versus now, when you can do this digitally, you can go online, the shippers can go online and put their freight, make it visible to all these different carriers that we talked about, and conduct transaction through the platform. So you get a much, much better fit instead of just hoping that somebody smiling and dialing can come up with a similar fit without the technology. I mean, think about, you know, when you go look for a hotel, you now go out digitally, you do a search, you put in a parameter, you know, you may put 5 miles from the area that you want to be at. You do that instead of just picking up a listing of all the hotels across the country and just start dialing one by one, hoping you find one close to where you want to be. So it's really, when you think back about it all, it's amazing that it took us as an industry this long to really get to this point. But I'm glad we are, because it is making things much more efficient.
I love the hotel analogy. I worked in the music business a long time ago, and there was this great story about David Geffen took artists over to Paris, and he had to go down there and pay with a check. And nowadays, you think about it, if you don't pay with a credit card or you don't go online to book a hotel, like, what? This is antiquated. How did this work? They didn't know if the check was going to clear. So it's incredible the role that technology has played. And when we look at travel is now getting ready to boom in post-COVID as consumers emerge from COVID. But we're running into the topic of inflation. And I'd love to get your thoughts on inflation, because Gary Friedman, the chairman and CEO of Restoration Hardware, commonly known as RH, said the following on the company's Q1 earnings call. I don't think anybody really understands how high prices are going to go everywhere, in restaurants, in cars, and everything. I think it's going to outrun the consumer. What sort of pricing impacts are you seeing from inflation? Because Mr. Friedman's letter was well read. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, well, I'm not an economist, so I'll give that disclaimer right off the bat. But I think you've got to look at what's going on all around. And we see that there is a tremendous labor shortage. And to be able to get that labor, to get people to show up to work and perform the work, especially hard to do work, such as driving a truck, people are going to have to pay a higher wage. And we see that. And our wages have been under pressure for the last several years. And in some ways, I'm glad to see it. I'm glad to see truck drivers making more and more money. But what it's going to mean is, whether it's from the driver wages or increase in equipment cost, and you've heard some of the values of used equipment, you can see that right now. You could go sell your used car for a much higher price than you could have gotten from the same vehicle, you know, 2-3 years ago. The problem is, what you're not going to be able to find a new one to buy, because there's not much product out on the lots. So I think all the industries are under pressure on the cost side, and we're no different than that. Obviously, with 33,000 employees and 23,000 of those being drivers, and with the pressure on driver wages, that's something that our industry is going to have to face. And then we've already just talked about the equipment, and then, you know, look at fuel prices. Yes, they've been seesawing back and forth, but they're extremely high, and we all know we aren't going to haul much freight without any fuel. So we got drivers, we got fuel. Those are two of our largest costs, throwing the equipment in there. And so you do have three areas that are under pricing pressures that we've got to pass along to the shippers. And ultimately, that means to all of us as consumers.
Is that affecting the demand? Because on one side, you look at the growth of e-commerce. A buddy of mine jokes, oh, Amazon's at your house every day. Well, that went on a truck to get here.
Obviously, I'm not going to say anything that could be viewed as a forward-looking statement here when you're asking me about affecting demand as we speak. I'll just go back to the time when we reported our last quarter. We've been very fortunate at J.B. Hunt. During 2021, most carriers were not able to add capacity. And if you look back on our financial documents that we disclosed, we were able to add a significant number of drivers. And our dedicated operation alone, we called out the number of drivers that we added in two consecutive quarters. And that number totaled up to approximately 1,500 drivers plus just in two quarters. So we've been fortunate that we've been able to add capacity for the marketplace. And obviously, we wouldn't add that capacity if we didn't have the demand. So the demand has still been there, even though, you know, we did see inflationary pressures all through the course of the year. What is going to happen the remainder of this year remains to be seen. as to what happens. You know, it's I think there's a transition going on of people that were staying in home and were doing the list of projects around the home, you know, building the deck or putting up a new fence or whatever. Maybe some of that has run out and some of those dollars are finding its way into, you know, services such as travel. On the flip side, there's got to be pent up demand for people to be taking possession of like furniture or cars that they could not get and that those were going to be making deliveries this year. So I don't know what the next 9 months are going to hold for us for the rest of the year. All I know is that we're going to be out there. We're going to be retaining the best drivers we can possibly have. We're also going to be soliciting all the freight we can and be trying to do a good matchmaking process on J.B. Hunt 360 and continue to operate as safely as we can and continue to offer the services that we have, such as that I rattled off earlier, like intermodal and dedicated and our truckload services and our brokerage and flatbed and so forth.
I have no doubt that you'll do it, and we can all agree you want happy and healthy drivers, professional individuals working. You want them happy and healthy.
You know, in all this, when you sit back and think about it, it goes back to our mission statement of creating the most efficient transportation network in North America. And to do that, you got to have the best drivers. You got to have the drivers operating the truck each and every day. You have to have them operating on optimized routes so that you reduce the amount of miles that you run to deliver the load, reduce the amount of empty miles to the next load. So all of these things tie together, having the best equipment out there that most fuel efficient, and to, again, create that most efficient transportation network in North America.
Does J.B. Hunt's commitment to ensuring the best equipment, does that help you retain and hire new drivers and know J.B. Hunt cares and that they're getting the best quality product possible?
Absolutely. I think you got to show employees, just not drivers, but all the employees, that you truly do care about them as individuals. And the company really does do that. And how do I know? Because I've been here 30 years and this was my seventh company. And call me arrogant or whatever else, but I think I could have found another job. But J.B. Hunt has kept me here because of the culture of the company, the way that you're treated, and the growth opportunities. And I think that's true of office employees as well as drivers. And to your point, yes, drivers expect to have clean, safe equipment. They expect to be treated correctly. They want the same things that you and I want. They want to be at home and see their family and to be paid a fair wage in doing this and take care of them. So all those things that we want, the drivers want the same things. And sometimes it's a little frustrating. People go, well, why is there driver turnover? And I said, well, because we got to deliver them the same things that all of us want, because that's what they want and need. And fortunately, again, at J.B. Hunt, the way we've been able to morph our business is 90% of our jobs are now local or regional. Contrary to the days when I first came here back in 1992, where we had all over the road jobs where drivers were gone for 3 to 4 weeks at a time. So I can go to a family reunion now, and I've done this, and I can encourage people to become a truck driver. I can say this is a very good profession. It's almost like, you know, when I was growing up, it was if you really didn't know what to do, didn't know if school was going to be your thing or not, weren't ready to buckle down and study, many times they would encourage you to go to the service, which I'm glad that many of our men and women did. Couldn't be more proud of our military. And so I want that to continue to be a viable option for people. On the flip side of that, I can honestly say, you know, you ought to look at truck driving, because truck driving is now a profession where you can go into that industry in a short period of time, be making $55,000, $60,000, $65,000, and sometimes you can be making more than that. And don't go into debt. Come out here and make some money. We have tuition reimbursement. Many other companies have tuition reimbursement. And we actually have a scholarship program that we're rolling out to our employees and all that they can apply for. So instead of going into debt and not knowing what you want to do, come drive a truck and see what you think about that. And you may learn that you want to be a truck driver for the rest of your career. You may learn that it's a profession that you like, but you'd rather get into the management side of it. Or you may take some classes online and decide, you know what, I'd really rather get into computer technology than go do that. But now you're entering into it with money in your back pocket. You've understood what it means to get a paycheck from someone and be able to learn how to budget and all. So truck driving is now a profession that I think you can really encourage people to take a serious look at.
J.B. Hunt cares. I repeat, J.B. Hunt cares. What you said should be in every graduation document from an individual coming out of high school or vocational school. Because you're right. There's a great career where you do not have to go into debt. You do not have to max out your credit cards. Absolutely well said. And I want to echo what Craig said. Thank you to the men and women that serve in our military. We definitely owe you an incredible debt of gratitude. Without you, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Craig, you have this culture of J.B. Hunt caring, but you also have a culture of J.B. Hunt innovating. We talked about the 360 platform. So you have that individual, perhaps they came out of vocational school and they have a good a technical thing and they're really good at repairing because they grew up in their dad's auto shop. They can then say they start a career at J.B. Hunt, they earn good money, then go on to technology because J.B. Hunt's innovating and experimenting with autonomous trucks. You have the commercial partnership with Waymo, really positive. Could you talk about that partnership and how it first started, please?
Yeah, you know, that's go all the way back to 2016. I actually looked it up on my cell phone the other day. You know, keeping track of your messages has some benefits. That I presented electric vehicles and autonomous vehicles to the executive team back in 2016. And there was a mixed reception. You know, you would hear some people say, well, not in my lifetime. And you would get the same reception actually from many of the OEMs, if not all the OEMs. But I went out to Vegas to CES soon thereafter. And that's where I met several electric players and also the autonomous companies. And actually, if I remember right, that's where you and I first met.
Correct.
So when I got out there, you could obviously talk to people that were in the business and wanted to see the business grow and flourish. And so had some great conversations with several people. And with CES and all, came to know Charlie Jatt with Waymo. And we started having conversations and all, and now we've worked together for, let's say, two or more years. We've been having conversations, dialogue, and formally entered into a market study together. And then it's been well documented. We've conducted some pilots. And when you're looking at the autonomous space, that it doesn't take you long when you're looking at the different players to come across Waymo and what all they've been successful at doing. If you're going to look at this space, you've got to go and look and see and talk to Waymo and see what they have to offer. And it's been a very good partnership.
When you were going through the conversations with Charlie, and Charlie, thanks for coming on the podcast a few weeks back. It was an awesome conversation. Charlie mentioned that there were several individuals that Waymo was meeting with, got to go to Chandler and ride in the van. Were you one of those individuals that got to go to Chandler and ride in the van?
Yes, that was quite an experience, you know, because it's one thing to show videos, which I've continued to do through the years at our different kickoff meetings and budget meetings and with the executive team. And you show the videos of the autonomous vehicles going in the streets of San Francisco or all, and all at the time had safety drivers. But you can see that and you can say, wow, that's impressive. But until you ride in an autonomous vehicle, and I've ridden in autonomous trucks with several of the companies, but the only fully autonomous vehicle that I've ridden in with no driver has indeed been the Pacifica minivan out there in Chandler, Arizona, which is Phoenix. And when you get in that and it takes off, first off, you got to know that it has sensors in there. It knows if you don't have on your seatbelt or if someone jumped in the front seat because they don't want anybody in the front seat with it. And then you take off. And we went on a ride somewhere between 20 and 25 minutes in duration. And we crossed four lanes of traffic. We took left turns. We took right turns, pulled up to stoplights. And actually, we were side by side another vehicle. And that's where we got a reaction, where the person next to us started motioning to lower your window to converse with them. Then we rolled it down and they hollered out some language about where in the world is your driver. You know, we had to lean up from the back seat and said, well, we have an autonomous driver here. And they let out a few chuckles and some more words. And then, of course, our autonomous driver took off. It's very impressive of the work that they've done on the automobile side. And it was quite an experience. And, you know, now they just announced they're live in San Francisco. And I know some of their competitors are going to be going live in short order if they aren't certain cities. And I would encourage anyone that has reservations and questions about the autonomous technology to ride in one of these vehicles. Yes, a truck is different than a car, but I like how Charlie said it once. He goes, well, you know, you're not going to hire a truck driver that never drove a car. And I thought that was a pretty good statement. So I do think they have some learnings that they can take from one into the other. But yes, the short answer to your question, yes, I rode in the vehicle and it was an impressive ride.
And I want to give Waymo a shout out. They're also expanding into downtown Phoenix as well. So now they're in Chandler and downtown Phoenix. So it seems that they're starting to expand a lot faster. So it tells me the technology is maturing a lot more quickly now. When you were in Chandler and you're with the Waymo team going for riding that vehicle, did that start to help to develop the trust between you and Waymo? So when you met with the board of J.B. Hunt, you had that trust because you experienced the technology firsthand?
Yeah, and let's say that really it was my discussions were more with our executive leadership team than and not the board. But yes, the trust began early on, though. The being, you know, familiar with Waymo, that name carries a significant amount of name recognition, value, trust, and we haven't seen anything but more of that as we've been dealing with them. It's where it really stems from our point of view is about their commitment to safety. You know, because we really pride ourselves on safety and being committed to it. And I actually was our chief safety officer back in 1997. So safety is extremely important to me. So seeing about the way Waymo worked, that they're very reluctant to give you any sort of timetable as to when this technology will actually be out there for companies to have installed on trucks for the outside world to buy, that they want to be sure that the equipment is as safe as it can possibly be. And we've noticed that from the very beginning in dealing with them, that they're very safety oriented, and that lines up very well with us as far as our values. So it's been an impressive time that we spent together, and the pilot went extremely well, and we're looking forward to conducting additional pilots.
Was there anything that you learned in the pilot? You said, aha, this was a big breakthrough. This was going to have a positive impact on the J.B. Hunt business.
I wouldn't say there was an aha moment. I would just say that we were pleased with the results and that the reactions that we got from the Waymo employees, J.B. Hunt employees, and the customer, they were excited about it. So the truck performed as we expected it to. So that's why I say there wasn't an aha moment. Obviously, it has a long ways to go. We believe that the technology will indeed pull certain types of freight on certain lanes, and we're excited to play a part in it. But I'll be quick to say that we're going to need skilled professional drivers for a long, long time. And, you know, when I go and have ridden with drivers in the past, you see the different driver-centric functions that the drivers do, you know, from dialing down the trailer, to drop a trailer and hook up to another one, disconnecting the glad hands and all on the trailer, participating in the loading or unloading or the paperwork requirements. And then you go make the delivery. And if you ride with one of our dedicated trucks that goes out to a farm, you see the driver so carefully, meticulously deal with the control levers that's taking the boom off of the trailer and putting it over the grain bin to empty the grain into storage there. Also go out to make a delivery from a home improvement store to a customer, and you have the basically like a forklift on the back of the flatbed trailer, and you unload the sod and the shingles, and you're about to leave only to have the wife come out and say, my husband is supposed to tell you to put it on the left side of the house, not the right side. So you had to do it all over again. Then what about making the delivery to the fast food place where you knock on the back door and that signals to the store manager, move everything out of the way because I'm about to deliver some hamburger buns and patties. So there's a lot of different issues that come up in transportation that are going to have to be dealt with, like picking up a trailer and trying to leave after you do a drop and hook at a customer, only to find out that wasn't the right trailer, even though your paperwork had said that was the trailer you're supposed to get. So now you got to go drop that trailer and pick up another one. But again, there will be autonomous trucks on the roadways, and I think you'll see those pulling, again, certain types of freight on certain lanes.
You mentioned with the QSR, the skilled professional drivers, they get to build a relationship with the manager of the QSR restaurant. They get to build a relationship at the Grand, and they look forward to seeing those things, and there's that comfort level. So skilled professional drivers, they will play a big role. And I think more importantly, they build trust with your customers. And knows, okay, Bob's coming. Okay, Mary's coming. Oh, great. And they have a nice conversation. Okay, see you next week. See you the next day. That's the beauty of it, in that they do such an incredible job at that.
You're exactly right. I mean, they get to know the people at the dock, and they get to know about the kids and how was the dance recital or how was the ball game or whatever else. And, you know, when we look at, you know, trying to project out what this is all going to mean going forward, you know, you've got to look at the data. And Roland Berger, which is a firm that I look at a lot of their materials they put out, they forecasted what autonomous trucks would look like down the road. And they put a slow rate adoption, a mid rate adoption, and a fast rate adoption. And in their mid rate adoption, they're showing 400,000 autonomous vehicles out on the roadway in 2035. And they're showing, even with 400,000 autonomous vehicles out on the roadway, that our country will be in need of more skilled professional drivers than what we have today. So again, more drivers than what we have today. And part of that has to do with the age of the driving force being approximately 46 years old. Some studies say up to 50 years old. But the National Transportation Institute, NTI, puts out some good information also. And they put out that over 20% of the drivers are over 55 years old. And 6% of the drivers are 65 years old and older. So we've got this workforce that is going to have a large number of retirements coming about in the near future. We have this demand, which the current demand, ATA says we're 80,000 drivers short today and soon to be over 100,000 in the next coming years. So we've got to find a way to retain the great drivers that we have today and to continue to recruit new talented people that want to develop a skill to operate these trucks. Because again, even with the autonomous trucks out there, which I do believe are coming, but we're going to need skilled professional drivers for many, many years.
You said it earlier, you can hire those individuals, you can train them, and they're not going to go into debt. You're going to offer them a great job that will put them on a trajectory to a wonderful, possibly even better job. You never know. And when you look at changing markets, we briefly touched on it, is fuel. Because do you think the future will be a hybrid approach where you consist of alternative fuels, renewable energy, green hydrogen, and electrification until there's a industry-wide standard that's generally adapted, just like diesel is today?
Yes, I do think we'll come to a hybrid approach. But I wanted to continue one thought while you touched on it about the driver. And we say around here we want to provide a better job, a better life for drivers, and we believe we can do that, and that we were founded by a driver, Mr. J.B. Hunt himself, Ford drivers. So, yes, just finishing up that point. Now, getting to about the fuel and all, the hybrid approach, I absolutely think we're going to have a hybrid approach. It's exciting to learn about electric vehicles, and I can't wait for the technology to continue to develop. And we're seeing it right before our eyes, and that's what's so impressive. I mean, all saw what happened to flat screen TVs. You know, when they first came out and they were $20,000, went to $10,000. And I bet most of us didn't jump in at that level, and then went to $5,000, and then, you know, $2,500 down to $18,000. I think I bought my first one at $1,200. Now you can buy a great one for $600. So we see that technology and how it improved through the years. We saw the same thing with the cell phone. I look back, had that cell phone that looked like a brick I'd hold in my hand, and the phone was literally over $3,000 back in 1983 when a Honda Accord sold for $11,000. So, and then we got the bag phone, which was about half the cost, and because it was as big as a shoebox, it had longer battery life. You know, it went from 30 minutes to an hour. Still had to pay over a dollar a minute to talk, and then you know, you sure didn't want to be out of the range, or what they call it. They had some sort of zone that you could be in.
Roaming.
What was it called?
Roaming.
Roaming, yes. You get the roaming charges. Oh, gosh. Then all of a sudden your bill would double and triple. So we saw all that progress. And I think we're going to see the same thing with the battery vehicles. And again, whether they're electric or whether hydrogen fuel cell, which one will win out? We don't know, because the technology is going to continue to develop. The easy way answer to that is that we're needing both. But we'll see that technology continue to develop, whether it's solid state batteries, multi-metal batteries, hydrogen fuel cell, a combination of those. And then you throw in there, you know, the ability to have renewable diesel is a very viable option. So I think we're going to need all of these different types of fuels.
As the technology develops, right, with solid state batteries, the improvements around electrification, I think a lot about the infrastructure and the energy grid. Well, do you think the energy grid will be able to take this additional load? If you look where the truck stops are, do they have to put microgrids in, or is that all that going to have to be upgraded? Because I saw there's been public statements from Travel Centers of America, for example, give public statements saying that they're looking into creating microgrids. Do you think that's going to have to happen?
Yeah, you hit on a very important subject, because electric vehicles, some are coming available in the marketplace today, but the range, the weight, the initial cost, the residual, the uptime, all those components that make it very hard to make any sense of this when compared to a diesel are tough to grasp. Then you throw on top of that the whole issue about the grid that you were talking about and being able to recharge, or in the case of hydrogen, refuel. It isn't out there today. And we've run into some issues with that ourselves as we've tried to bring on some electric vehicles in some locations. And just to test two vehicles, we had to spend $30,000 upgrade on a transformer. So now we were an older part of town. And so what's that going to be when you build out new districts, new power lines, and the utilities know that the electric vehicles are coming and they gear up for that, that can change on the new buildings. But still, bringing that power to existing buildings is very expensive. The utilities many times want you to sign a long-term commitment. So the infrastructure is a huge challenge. And I welcome any and all technology there as far as that the utilities have to offer, or the current fuel providers can bring on board, or outside companies. And, you know, we've seen some other players get into the mix here as far as developing and building out infrastructure. So it remains to be seen again about what all can happen here, because it is a substantial amount of electricity that it takes to charge a large truck to pull 80,000 pounds any significant number of miles. Put it this way. Current trucks you see people talking about on the marketplace are talking about ranges of 250 miles. Okay, that's in very favorable conditions. Okay, a diesel truck, you have two 100-gallon tanks on there, 7 miles to a gallon, so you have 1,400-mile range on the diesel truck versus the 250. We don't need 1,400-mile range, but we do need more than 250 to operate efficiently. If we're limited to 250 miles, and I would say a driver's going to get real nervous starting around that 180 to 200 mile range, that you're going to run that vehicle in the not, it won't be the most optimized way of running it. And you're going to have two or three vehicles to do the work of one vehicle. Because when you bring that truck in, you're going to have to, on the battery electric side, where you're going to have to charge that, either rapid charge it, which are you going to pay peak demand surcharges at that time of day, or you're going to have to slow charge it, which means it sits overnight. Hydrogen fuel cell could be different, but you've got to get this cost of hydrogen down.
You bring up a point about the skilled professional drivers. If I'm a skilled professional driver, give you an example, I'm going from LA to Las Vegas, and I'm going through Barstow, California, which has the winds and perhaps the Santa Ana winds picked up. I'm very nervous. I would gladly take my diesel truck because I know my diesel truck's going to get me safely to Las Vegas with the important freight for the customers. That's a very valid point.
It is. I will say drivers love driving the trucks when we had them. I love driving the vehicle when I had it. It's smooth. I mean, it takes off like a golf cart, you know, so you get the acceleration. You don't have to go through all the gears and anticipate all the gear shifting. So it is an impressive ride. And again, we can't wait to get our hands on the trucks as they come available.
as a company built by a driver for drivers, that's exciting, because then there's another example of, you start with J.B. Hunt, perhaps one day you can drive that electric vehicle and you go home and tell your family how cool it is. And Craig, as we look to put this whole conversation to context, what do you think the future of transportation logistics looks like?
I think it could provide an excellent career path for many individuals. We talked about drivers, also our maintenance, our technicians there is, I mean, think about it. It's just not working on the carburetor anymore, right? You've got all the electronics, and then you put the electric vehicles in there, and then the autonomous vehicles. It's going to be a lot of demand for skilled technicians there. And then look at how this has all become such an industry that's filled with data and machine learning and all. It's computer technologists, the people that are learning about AI and machine learning in school, they need to come and look at jobs in this transportation logistics space, because it isn't going anywhere except increasing and more demanding. Meaning, look at what we all expect as purchasers of goods. No longer can you get by with the mail order that I grew up with, where you place something and it literally said 6 weeks for delivery. You know, now we're upset if we can't get it in 2 days, and we're quickly learning how to expect it in 1 day. So the challenges are going to be on the logistics companies to provide that solution to the shippers that they're offering to their customers, to get that product, to get it on time, and provide the transparency of that product all the way through. You know, Shelley Simpson says it many times, if we can track our pizza going through the line, we ought to be able to track our load going from pickup to delivery. And so there's more and more challenges in the space of logistics that we all need to continue to work on and make it better for our customers and their end customers.
Track and trace is going to be huge. It plays right into transparency. I'll go on the record, I think that'll be one of the next biggest trends outside of Web3 in the next 3 years, especially as it relates to logistics company. And if you're an individual listening to this podcast and you're interested in a job at J.B. Hunt, it's a growing industry, logistics. It's only going to continue to grow. So, Craig, thank you for shining a positive light on J.B. Hunt. And more importantly, thank you for shining a positive light on the logistics industry, because it is a really great job for an individual looking for that job. And, Craig, as we look to wrap up this super insightful conversation, what would you like our listeners to take away with them today?
Well, one thing is, let's be thankful for all the medical professionals that worked through the pandemic we had, and let's be thankful for all those drivers and the mechanics and frontline operators who also worked through the pandemic and continue to move our goods. But what I'd like people to walk away with is knowing that we don't have to wait for this technology to continue to be developed, which we all want to work hard to see it developed. Lots of capital is going into that, which I'm glad it is. So it's got a ton of momentum, and it will get here. But in the interim, let's just not sit back and wait. Let's take advantage of the tools that we have today. And some of those tools include intermodal with a 60% reduction in your carbon footprint. That is available today for people to utilize. And then also using tools such as J.B. Hunt 360, where you can digitally match the freight that the shipper and carrier can come together to improve efficiencies and run out empty miles. So let's don't sit back and wait. Let's take action today.
Beautiful said. I'll say it this way. Let's work together today to reduce carbon emissions. It'll be better for society. It's better for the environment. And our kids will thank us. Because the future is bright, the future is autonomous, and the future is J.B. Hunt. Craig, thank you so much for coming on the Road to Autonomy today.
Thank you, Grayson.
Thank you for listening to the Road to Autonomy podcast. If you've enjoyed listening, please rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Want to get in touch? Follow us on Twitter at Road to Autonomy, or email podcast@brulteco.com. The Road to Autonomy is produced by Brulte & Company. The views and opinions expressed on the Road to Autonomy podcast do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Brulte & Company. The content discussed on this podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be taken as legal, tax, investment, or business advice.